This is the Fantastic Books Podcast,
the fantasy and sci-fi book review podcast for fantasy fanatics, book nerds, and lovers of lore and stories.
Covering some of the most loved fantasy series as well as brand new novels.
With your hosts, Anna
and Sam. Let's see what we're reading this week. Welcome back, fantastic listeners. This is Sam.
And Anna.
And this week, we're joined by author Brian Asher, author of The Fear of Moncroy, as well as the Intercontinent series. Brian, welcome back.
Good to be back. Excited to talk about the third book.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are covering chapters 6 through 10 this week. A good amount of action's taken place over in our world of Moncroy over here.
I think we left off with questions about who the killer was. Like, the vampiric court wasn't sure who the killer of the heir to House Veruticus was. Davion had offered to go out and go hunting for whoever the killer was. So that's sort of where we left our characters.
As Davion is heading towards Helice, it's a second town that he's checked while he's looking for this huntsman because they're worried it could be more than one.
That's true, yeah.
With three vampires being slain, is it one very accomplished person? Is it many? Although Davion is under the guise of scouting for the vampires, he's hoping to encounter a possible wayward.
Yeah, I think he thinks it's an actual wayward at this point.
Yes.
So he ends up going to the town. It's the second town that he's checked out. So he is just sort of starting out his hunt, scoping out nearby towns, trying to get any kind of lead on Carnith. He does have Carnith's description, which is helpful, but that's, I think, all he's going on. And he ends up going to a bar and he uses his vampiric hypnotism or allure on a barmaid. So, like, again, we're getting another classic vampire trope there, which I liked.
And I did like the world building you included, where although the vampiric gaze can be powerful, it's not infallible. It really determines on the victim's ability to resist. It won't guarantee that the victim will necessarily do everything and anything the vampire wants.
I think they have to maintain or make direct eye contact for it to work in your world, right?
That's part of it, yeah, is that they have to. It's almost like the rule of being invited into the home is kind of the same thing. They have to sort of be invited into your psyche in a way. Like, if you look at them and you kind of let your guard down mentally, that kind of allows them to have a little more influence. I kind of wanted to build on that a little bit. And I also didn't want it to be ultra powerful, because when you think of all the abilities vampires have had or acquired over the years, it's like, man, they're, you know, God tier. I can't make it. I got to nerf some of this a little bit. Like, I want them to be powerful, but
they got to be killable.
Yes, yes.
I'm just thinking of What We Do in the Shadows and how much they use hypnotism to, like, cover up their little mistakes. like dumb little moments. It's like, did you really need to do that?
Oh, my God. So good.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Unfortunately for our barmaid, she does not stand a chance, and Davion puts some moves on her, and she leads him outside.
I loved the, like, oblivious dad that they walk by being like, where are you going?
Yeah.
Like, they're going out the back, okay? What do you think is happening?
There's a rendezvous happening, Dad. Stay out of this. So this is where things get interesting, where our barmaid friend Ophelia thinks they're going to have some sweet smoochy time.
So this just become like a G podcast.
Yeah, really. We're keeping it real tame here.
They're just hugging.
Yeah. Why are they fighting? Davion in vampire form decides to drink her blood. And I have questions. One thing to drink the blood, is this so he can control himself and not just, like, drain her completely?
Yeah, I think he drinks one drop of blood.
Yeah, just a little bit. Partially to also leave a bit of a hint behind to the possible vampire killer that, like, you know, hey, you'd like, not a full bite to give it away, but just, like, a little bit to be like, hey, you know, going after the neck and hopefully plant seeds that this guy's going around doing this stuff. So it might lure the lure the killer out.
Okay. Just the tip.
Just the tip.
And so dad comes out looking for his daughter like any protective father would, and Davion equips the hunting mask and goes full gargoyle.
Yep.
Pretty awesome, and therefore attacks dad. And Davion's been very strategic this whole time. Doesn't fully drain Ophelia. When he attacks dad, he misses his vital organs so he can live to tell the tale, and then he disappears into the night.
Well, I think it's also Davion's not truly a vampire, right? No. He's not gonna just kill for the sake of killing. I know he's trying to like lay a trail for Carnith, but I think he's also strategically trying to not be a bad guy.
Anti-hero.
Definitely true.
He's still good.
Still a little bit.
Yeah, there's a little bit left in there.
He's jaded. He's had a rough decade, but intentions are still pure.
Yeah, but I think his anger is towards the vampires and not towards humans.
Yeah, for sure. We actually had a pretty interesting question as far as your writing process with this chapter, because it played out very well visually again with your action. When you're doing your storyboarding and planning, how much of it are you planning to happen visually? And there's times where we, as readers, end up relying on actions happening off screen. Is there like lists that you make? Is there like a giant wall web, like Charlie Day conspiracy board in which you're doing your storyboarding?
No, I definitely don't have the large boards. I would say that at most I have like smaller lists that just kind of outline the scenes for the most part. And then other than that, for me, it's when I'm writing, there's a lot of music I'll listen to, which will help set the mood. For me, it'll help me be more descriptive because I feel like I'm there. So it's a lot of like in the moment in that way. It's like I want to feel like I'm there so I can really feel like I'm writing about it.
That's really cool. I did forget that you really enjoy implementing music during your writing process. And I think it's really creative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big one for me. It helps me just stay in the zone, knock out any like other auditory distractions, and then just, you know, put me in the mood of the scene because there are different scenes being written. So it's like, I can find some like taverny fantasy music. YouTube has every type of music you need. So I usually go on there, find something, and then I'll listen to that while I'm writing a certain scene.
I was going to ask if you use those like ambiance videos. Have you seen those with like, it's like cool fantasy art and then like matching music? I've been using those a lot lately.
Oh yeah, 100%. I love those.
We put them on in the background too, like just when we're hanging out at our house. But
yeah,
I found some that I feel like match up with the book that I'm trying to write. So I was like, oh, these are perfect to get right like in the scene. Yeah.
Yeah, save them. Because the worst is when you're trying to find the right type of music and you can't. And you just keep like trying and trying and trying. And yeah. So I like and save all the ones that are good because so I can find them again.
Smart. I guess like another question. I don't know if we've asked you this before. When you read, do you get like a full movie playing in your head? Or do you just have an image here and an image there? What kind of visualizer are you?
Full movie.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I'm jealous. I'm so jealous of people like that.
I mean, I would say full movie, like, especially when I can get in the zone, but sometimes it's hard for me to, like, I'll get distracted by little things, and that's part of the reason I love listening to music or having something that can close off any auditory distractions, because once I'm in the zone, I really, like, when I'm writing, it's the same thing. Like, when I'm writing, I see the movie in my head, and it's good and bad, because sometimes I forget to be as descriptive as maybe I could be, or in a better way, because in my head I'm seeing the movie, so I'm like not always necessarily translating all that to the page, but I try to do my best.
That's what edits are for.
Yeah. Exactly.
You can go back and edit for sure.
We'll always get it in post.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it was Robin told us when we were talking to her about her book that she just writes the dialogue like a almost like a theater script or movie script.
Oh.
And then she goes back and adds in descriptions and scenes and everything. But I thought that was sort of like a
interesting,
at least an interesting way, especially for people who struggle with dialogue. I thought that was kind of smart. Just imagine the conversation and then like work back from that.
She was also very unique in that regard because she thoroughly enjoyed writing dialogue, which not a lot of writers.
Yeah, she said that was like her favorite part and it came easy, which I don't think I've ever heard from anybody else.
I don't mind
kudos,
it.
Kudos, Robin.
I don't mind it. I like it, I guess. I don't know if I could ever just write the dialogue, though. That's interesting.
I do like your dialogue in this one. I feel like all of your characters have very clear voices in my mind when I hear them speaking. They've got like distinct patternings and phrases that they use. So
I thoroughly enjoy Karnath's quips.
Yeah,
he's the
young brash guy. So yeah, the air of youth is accurate. Yeah.
I feel like that's how you would have been at that age.
Oh, yeah. I would definitely have been like Leonardo from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, just like coming in hot. I definitely like combination of like Leonardo or like Spider-Man, like Peter Parker. You got to have like the snappy one-liners as you taunt your antagonist and then save the day.
I agree.
You are a ham. You are.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Karnath, chapter 7.
Yeah, so Davion has laid this trap for Karnath at this point. That's the end of chapter 6. And then chapter 7 opens with Karnath meeting with Ophelia. So at least the breadcrumbs have led him to where Davion wants him. But then as we see when they start to interact with each other, the trap that Davion has laid doesn't play out quite the way he's expecting.
Yes.
But Karnath is talking with Ophelia, and she's talking about how, you know, she was attacked by this gargoyle or ghoul and had heard through all these rumors and gossip surrounding him. People are calling him the Silver Savior. So like he's got this sort of like folk hero-esque persona now. And so she had heard that he had saved a family from three ghouls, and she was hoping that he would help her because Davion actually left a note in her pocket saying, "I'm not finished." So there was one extra little like tidbit in there that we didn't realize.
Call me.
Yeah.
That's like those notes you pass your little. It's like, will you be my friend? Circle yes or no.
Yeah, or maybe.
Will you come fight me? Circle yes or no. So Karnath says like he sees the note, but he agrees to help her only if Davion returns, because he obviously knows that the ghouls that he killed at the beginning were not ghouls, but vampires. So he's suspicious and not quite sure what Davion is up to. And he does tell this to Ophelia. He says that, you know, the ghouls were vampires, and the vampires had broken the treaty that they have with the humans by hunting them.
Right, and this really opens up the world. The humans have been so docile and placated that they don't understand the bigger picture, that they're being controlled. And the fact that vampires are doing what they want, it's kind of like a, oh my god, wait, what moment? They're not following the rules, like... What's stopping them from continuing doing this?
Yeah, so I have a question just because I don't quite remember because I read the book so long ago. I mean, I have been rereading. But the treaty that they've set up, they've got like the puppet dukes in. So like Duke Royston we met in the beginning. When he organizes the hunts for the vampires, is he like specifically sequestering off like a few people who are going to be the victims so that the humans don't realize they're getting attacked by vampires?
No, he's just allowed. They're just being warned that vampires are going to be in the area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So then do the humans think animals are attacking them, or do they realize it is the vampires?
Because of the projections from the masks, they think it's like other monsters. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So I didn't realize they always wore the masks.
Yeah, they always wear them just because then humans think like it's other stuff. Those poor werewolves, they get a bad rap.
Yeah,
they're ruining it for everybody else.
Mm-hmm. It's gargoyle season, okay?
Yeah.
I think I thought the masks were like a new invention, but that makes more sense for the like world building that they always wear the masks.
So we have a couple of interesting conversations during these chapters. Davion meets up with Yaspin now, and I'm enjoying these moments where if it's either Karnath or Davion when they meet with Yaspin, because he's just so heavily entrenched in the underground and knows so many secrets. And he only doles them out in little bits and spurs. And it's usually to satisfy his end as well.
Yaspin is definitely my favorite character.
Yeah.
Same. He's my favorite.
Web Weaver Yaspin.
I would love like a whole side book of just Yaspin.
Well, don't worry. There will be plenty more of him in the future. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Give me his backstory of like simple petty crime that leads to his defanging and banishment.
I mean, we know about that through like context clues. I'd love to see how he like sets himself up as the king of the underworld, essentially.
Yeah, that'd be a cool story.
Yeah.
Like, how does he go from fallen vampire to black market mastermind.
Yeah. And what was his petty crime? Overdue parking tickets. You left your horse here again!
Oh, you had great an opportunity for a Batmobile joke.
Oh, low-hanging fruit. Should have went for it. But with this conversation, Davion wants to ask Yasmin about...
He wants Yasmin to create rumors about where the ghoul, i.e. Davion, is going to strike next so that Karnath knows where to go. But then he also really wants to be able to meet Karnath because he knows Karnath is looking for the Waywards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, because obviously, like, we know that Davion is trying to find a way out of his predicament. He wants to meet up with Karnath before the vampires get to him, reveal who he is, and then hopefully get off this intercontinent and be free from being a pretend vampire for 10 years.
Yeah, it's a long haul. He's ready to move on.
Yeah. Yasmin thinks that Karnath is not going to fall for this. He thinks it's way too simple of a trap. He thinks that in addition to this, Davion's not going to be the only one looking for Karnath. Like, we know that other vampires are interested in him, but there might be even other people looking for Karnath as well. You know, he's shown up. He's, again, like I said, this folk hero, but everybody seems to know that he's looking for the Waywards. Like, he has not been secretive about this. So
no, so it could be more vampires, the werewolves. Actual gargoyles. So it's hard to say.
And then Yasmin also reveals that Karnath has a lot of knowledge about the Waywards, like we just said, but also about the Midlands, and he possesses a snared sword. Yasmin's not really sure how much Karnath knows, but he seems too smart and too well-equipped to fall for Davion's simple plan.
Yeah.
He sort of does and sort of doesn't, as we see in the next chapter.
Yeah. And I love the fact that Yasmin's, again, kind of pitting everyone to accomplish his long-term goals. Like, he has a grudge against the vampiric court for being banished. He wants to do what he can to help destabilize it as revenge.
Mm-hmm. One of the last lines of chapter 7, he says he did not tell Davion where Karnath was because he wants Karnath to be able to put up a good fight against the vampires, like give him an opportunity to ready himself so that he can actually strike a pretty good blow against the vampiric court for that revenge that he's you know, clearly looking for.
And I mean, also, like, just thinking out loud, the more destabilized the court is, the better it is for him, right? More people need illegal wares.
That's true. Yeah. I hadn't even thought of that.
Business be booming.
Yeah, he's my favorite. I wrote him kind of on, not on a whim, but yeah, I needed Karnath to meet up with somebody who was like going to be a liaison that could give him information, inspect the mask he found. And then when I started writing Yasmin's character, I just like got hooked. I was like, I need to know more about this guy. Like, who is he? What's he going to do? Like, he just became so much more involved in the story after writing him that he actually, like, I adjusted a lot of my outline because of how cool he was. So, which is a fun surprise.
The unsung hero.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you come up with your character names, speaking of creating your characters?
It depends. Sometimes I'll do, like, homage-y names, like the names that are sort of like homages to stuff. And then sometimes I just have a name that pops into my head. Yasmin was just a weird name that popped into my head. Same with Karnath in my first book, Oros. Like, there's certain names that they just fall into my head, and I'm sure there's some book or comic somewhere I read that kind of gave me ideas to think of the name. I don't know where they come from, but some of them, yeah, just I enjoy naming people. I enjoy made up fantasy names. It was actually a lot easier for me to name the fantasy made up people than like the more realistic sci-fi people. So
I feel like Yasmin's name fits him perfectly.
Yeah.
I appreciate like
just,
that.
Something about it just encapsulates it.
He just is a Yasmin.
Yeah. You know?
I gotta send you the Yasmin poster then. I gotta get you, or I'll send you the art so that you guys can print one out and put it on the wall. So
I think you sent us the art for all the characters, right?
Probably, if not.
Yeah. Oh, he looks great.
All right, we'll use him for our like weekly post about the episode. Because
I mean, yes.
he's one of my favorite illustrations. So he's like my profile picture on Twitter now. Him drinking the whiskey.
Yeah.
So a refined former vampire
with nothing to lose.
Well, we were going to talk about it later, but I guess we can talk about it now since you mentioned the whiskey. But like, You talk so much about like blood-infused food and teas and drinks in here. Did you come up with that on your own? And like, how do you come up with all the little recipes that you slip in?
So I mean, maybe there's another vampire thing that did it first. I don't remember, but I just was thinking like, oh, wouldn't it be interesting if like, if they're getting these humans and they're able to get them after, like, obviously drinking the blood is great, but like once it gets easy, it's like with our farming here, right? Like you're going to try all these different kinds of cool food, you know, when you don't have to go hunt it yourself, you're not super tired. You're like, yeah, I'll cook a steak with butter basting and all this stuff because I'm not exhausted from hunting it, right? So I figure for them, it's like after a while, it's like, yeah, we want to try different stuff and like get these different flavors. And if they're really like elegant and royal and regal, it's like, you know, they're going to want some type of like sophistication or elevation of their food. And so I thought, oh, you know, like for them, it's like, what's their like Michelin star blood food, you know? So that's kind of what I was thinking. Like, what if they're foodies and like these people taste this way and that way? So you don't want to mix like lemon zest with these people's blood because it's going to taste bad or whatever, right? So that's the way I was thinking is like, how do I kind of combine some of that fun like foodiness? Because I'm a bit of a foodie myself into like the vampire culture. As far as the recipes, some of them, I think I just looked up like, okay, if you have like a truffle or a tart or different recipes, how I just probably Googled some of those.
Yeah, it was just fun. Like, I remember reading that chapter with Anna, and especially like the description of the tea. I was like, ooh, like, I don't want blood, but I was like,
but a vampire does.
Sounds kind of nice.
We had seen that meme recently where someone asked if a vampire would prefer like venous or arterial blood, and some like med student went through all these reasons. And we were like, what is this? Like, he went into all these scientific reasons.
Always and then, arterial.
And then at the very end, someone's just like, this is exactly what a vampire would say.
I love those kind of debates, man. That's what, like, message boards were built on. Like, back in the day, that's what it was all about. YouTube was all about fan-made silly videos and skits, and message boards were all about just, like, ridiculous debates. Like, I can't remember. There was someone where it was Superman versus somebody, and they were talking about, like, how many degrees Kelvin his heat vision is. And I'm like, how do you even know this? But it's just so funny. Like, I love that kind of stuff. I love that, like,
oh, yeah. Over-explained gotta appreciate debate. It. A good nerd calculator moment.
Yes. Yes, that is exactly what it is. I love those. Yeah. Super fun.
There was like a whole part he was talking about in this meme where he was talking about that like the pressure of arterial blood is higher. So it would like spurt out better the way that you would want to drink out of like a water fountain that's got like good water pressure in it versus a bubbler that's like dribbling.
Also it being oxygenated
versus
there was venous,
like all
where
these reasons
it's already, you know, the air's been filtered out and it's making its way back in through the pulmonary system.
Oh I found it.
But if the blood is like super, but then like wine, would you want like the slow sip if the blood's really good, like you're getting like some good blood, you want to be like, okay, I want to shake their wrist around and then, you know.
Yeah, do you want flat versus sparkling water?
Yeah, the champagne. Sometimes you don't want bubbles. You're like, I want that, like, dry Malbec taste going on or whatever. Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, they talk about acidity because venous blood is more acidic.
Interesting.
And then they said, aside from the taste, that extra acidity is really bad for your gastric reflux. Do vampires get heartburn?
Oh, that's a good point. Man, I wish I'd ran into this earlier. I'll save all this material for the next one. Next vampire book will have some heartburn going on. Or not. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe they know how to mix it just right with something else and make it smooth for drinking.
Yeah.
I texted you the link to the whole shenanigans.
That is good. That is good research.
It was pretty good research. Spoken from someone who's probably a vampire out there. Seems like they know from experience.
Yeah.
All right. Where are we in the book, though?
The trap.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
And this is a great sequence.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun reading this. So we're back to Karnath's perspective, and he set a trap in the town using Ophelia. And from our perspectives as readers, it looks like he's just sending her out to walk around the town by herself. And then Davion's perched up on a roof and he's like seriously? Like, she just keeps making the same lap around the town? Like, I'm not an animal. Like, I know what's going on here.
He's not an animal, but he swoops down like a hawk and, like, snatches her. And I was like, damn.
Yeah, Davion's a strong fighter, so.
Yeah, and this fight sequence is great.
Yeah, I like that he had this reputation as a hunter, but we hadn't really seen it yet, but he definitely
owns up to
is
the name.
Very like agile and fast in his hunting.
So as Davion tries to snatch Ophelia and take her away to lure Carnath out, Carnath calls him out and he's telling him he's a coward. Sometimes the old insults work best, where he's like, I'm not a chicken.
But there were two other people that pretended to be Carnath first, remember?
Yes.
Okay. So that's where the traps got, like, kind of conflicted.
It gets a little bit more complicated. It's not so simplistic in nature.
Yeah, but I think they were both tired of waiting for each other, so they just... Davion jumped.
Yeah, he was ready to instigate.
But yeah, Karnak does just call him a coward, and they're fighting a little bit in the town, but then Davion says he knows about the Waywards and just runs.
Now it's, like, to his advantage, where Karnak follows him on his horse, and Davion has the advantage of having information, but also maybe a slight battle edge where he's luring him into the darkness of the woods.
Also tougher territory, too.
Yeah, so there's a lot of strategy involved with both of their plays. But I do really appreciate that Karnath's sword illuminates with fire.
Yeah.
So, you know, wards off the darkness. It's also, you know, makes him more fearsome.
I think he can also track snares, too, right? Like, he uses it to find Davion. His sword has a lot of really cool abilities.
Yeah.
Yeah, super useful.
And speaking of which, his sword also has like disintegration or like, I don't know how to describe
rot
it.
Rot powers?
Yeah.
Rot powers. Yeah, he like hits a tree and the tree starts to like crumble.
Yeah, so that was super cool.
He's got quite the equipped weapon. Since it is like a magical weapon, does Carnath have the ability to like change what the sword is doing? Mm-hmm. Like, can he? Okay. I didn't know how.
He's able to kind of swipe through a couple different options. Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
The toggle feature.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fire disintegration.
Yeah. Yeah. He can sort of choose. It's sort of the way he like twists or flicks the sword will like make certain things happen. So.
Oh, cool. Oh, yeah. I love that. Yeah. I wasn't sure because I know it's like his father's sword. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know if things were just sort of happening as the sword was maybe like sentient or if Carnath had full power over it.
I don't know if it's necessarily sentient, but anyone who knows how to utilize that snare could do the same things, but because the snare is to the sword instead of the person. So like, but not everyone would know how to do it.
I'm glad he knows how, because it's a really cool sword.
Yeah, go Carnath.
Yeah. And then he also, on top of it, has silver powder and a silver arrow in this fight.
Yeah, so this fight is so fast-paced and fun. I love that everyone, between Davion and Carnath, tries to outmatch one another, but they're very equally paced, and they tend to either block or counter-strike, and it's very evenly matched. But one of my favorite moments is where a majority of this fight, Davion's just evading Carnath's attack, but when he finally decides to go off on the offensive with the dual-sided axe, it is just such an awesome moment of like, this is why I'm the hunter, where he splits the silver arrow in half and he's like, I'm here. And like, even when he strikes the ground at Carnath, you know, it creates like a fissure that like chases after him. It's just such a boss move. It's so cool.
Yeah.
That's definitely like superhuman strength too.
Oh yeah.
Like no normal humans hitting the ground and having it crack. So it's, I think Carnath was getting a little cocky and then just like this big axe swing coming down and like cracking the ground underneath his feet is, maybe he didn't feel that way, but I felt like it was humbling to Carnath. I don't think he's easily humbled at all, but.
No, definitely meeting his match.
Yeah.
But in like classic anime fashion, when attacks don't work, it is time to talk things out. And
but they've been like verbally sparring the whole time too. Yeah. Like, what do you know about the Waywards? Who are you? Oh, my father. Oh, your father was a Wayward. Which one? Like,
you gotta have a little bit of that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just like this great build up to finally getting to the the apex of what we all want, is we understand as readers that these characters want the same thing, and we want to be able to see them understand that they can be allies.
Yeah, like, we all know it's coming, but it's still awesome, like, watching them come together.
Yeah. I'm just glad, as a reader, it wasn't like, all right, maybe one or two more encounters, and then we'll realize we want the same thing, that they both weren't stubborn enough to disregard each other.
I don't think that this kind of relationship would work with, like, a slow burn friendship. They're either going to become fast friends or kill each other. Like, there's no other options here. Yeah.
You're the right audience for my book, then.
Perfect.
Give me that beach read.
Yeah.
Right? Page turn it. So yeah, through all this like verbal and physical sparring, they end up revealing, like I said, Cardiff says that his dad was a wayward, and Davion's like, as they're fighting, like thinking, was it this wayward? Is it this wayward? And then finally, Cardiff has this like defensive maneuver right at the very end, and it was like his dad's signature move. And I think you actually put that move in Assassin of Alcazar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the fight scene with Scoria.
Yeah.
Between Regis and Scoria.
Yeah.
It was like a good little Easter egg for people who've read everything. But then, of course, Davion's like, whoa, Regis' signature move. It must be his son.
The real ones know.
You know, not his like silver streaked black hair or anything signature like that.
Yeah. What I appreciate, though, is in response to this, where Karnitz is like, well, how do you know my father? And he unveils his wayward amulet.
This could have been really bad if Karnitz is like, you killed a wayward to get that. Yeah.
You stole it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Right? No, but they believe each other. When we see them next, they are well into like their friendship and sort of planning their next move together.
And again, proper planning on your part, where instead of getting a double down exposition from both characters, that happens off screen. So next time when we see our homies, they understand the score.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that you don't have to give us like a play by play of everything. That's something that I have been struggling with trying to write my own book. I feel like I have to narrate every single thing that every character does, and it's impressive when I can see how well you can make things happen off screen, and I'm like, oh, within two sentences, like, you've given me enough context clues where I have filled in a bunch of time with these two characters, and I don't need to see them, like, introduce each other, like, themselves and, like, become friends and make a play. Like, you know, we can fill that in on the back end as readers.
So that being said, with this really fun and fast-paced fight sequence, did you have a favorite part of it that you wanted to implement from the beginning?
I would say when they're in the woods and both using their weaponry, I think was really cool. And Davion, like, I wanted him... A lot of people have swords. I've used a lot of swords. And I was like, what weapon can I give him that's just a little bit different? And I hadn't really used an axe. And originally I thought maybe two, like a double hatchet thing. And then I was like, oh, like a double-sided executioner axe. I feel like people don't really use those. So I thought it'd be fun to utilize that and then incorporating the powers into his weapon. Yeah. So that was fun. It was fun to see them both kind of shine and flex their abilities.
I like that too, because the double-sided axe isn't used that much because it is such a hefty weapon. But because he's got enhanced strength and he is such a good fighter, he can actually maneuver it really well.
I just play to his strength as a vampire, where normally that'd be such a cumbersome weapon for like a barbarian type of character. And instead, Davion just like wrecks everyone's day with it.
Yeah. Well, that's a fun thing too. I like writing people with different weapons that change their fighting style. So it's like the way a Karneth would fight versus a Davion, it's like the weapons really matter. It's like, you know, Davion has to use these big sweeping motions and big hulking sort of slams. And so that like affects the way he would approach a fight or utilize his weapon in a fight. I just find that kind of stuff fun. I like fighting styles and like how do those styles, you know, match up.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of which, I loved the little scene with the silver powder. It just plays a Karneth's fighting style, being quick and evasive and cunning, and that was just really cool. A super expensive attack, but awesome.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that in like vampire, like the like powder specifically in vampire books or media. There's always like silver bullets or
dagger,
silver daggers. Yeah, but I liked the idea of the powder. And I liked how strong it was. Like, it even started to affect Davion's cloak. So even his, like, garments aren't safe from it.
Yeah. Little vampire pepper spray, so.
Yeah.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Pocket garlic powder? No, something way more expensive. With this writing, though, you have done really well with Assassins of Malkuzay, Treasure Lorev, and now Fear of Montcroy with all these different action-packed scenes. Do you feel like your formula for action scenes has changed at all?
I would say in this one thing I tried to do was make sure I incorporated some of their like emotional context in between. I think more so in the very sort of climactic battle at the end, but kind of incorporating some of their like thoughts in between, so it's not too much like blow to blow. I think that was one thing I tried to focus on in this one a little bit more, I think, than the others, is like their strategy or their fear or just some of that thought process, not for too long, but trying to blend that in, I think, is where I'm trying to like evolve the fight scene writing in this book.
I think it was definitely noticeable in this one because they are having like dialogue, but there's also internal dialogue in this scene. Davion trying to run through his memories and think of who Karnath's dad is and kind of like that urgency he's having before the fight gets too far in, because he needs to prove to Karnath that he is a wayward or like has knowledge that would prove that.
Yeah, it was definitely very fluid.
Yeah, I liked how they like wove together really well.
I'd love to hear that.
We get a little bit of a cool down moment from all the action-packed fighting with chapter 9. We get Geldim Viructus sitting in his study, worrying about Davion that he hasn't been in touch in a while. And we get our favorite Countess Fiona coming in.
Yeah.
Devious.
Offering condolences.
Yeah. Her so genuine.
Yeah. She is just so fearsome and badass and just hostile. That's like the best way to describe her.
I think she's just calculated and like cold.
Yeah.
Like in a way that I feel like would be awesome if I had those qualities and I needed to be like a business person, it'd be great. Like in my head, I'd be like, I'm going to make this cool business deal and I'll like say my piece and like walk out and it'll be, everyone will just have their jaws on the floor.
And now I own all of you. Right? I'm a tycoon. Yeah.
Like yeah. I have no empathy for anyone. I'm a millionaire.
It's kind of a veiled threat where Countess Fiona offers to lead with her hunter, Tasea.
Oh, Tasha.
Tasha?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry.
I think we were saying like the way they say the character in The Witcher. There's a character named Tasea in The Witcher, and I think that's why we accidentally kept saying that.
Tasha. Got it.
Yeah, so she wants to use her own hunter, Tasha, but she's like got this reputation for being vicious and destructive.
A lot of collateral damage.
I got the impression that like she is a mad dog, and as soon as you let her go, like you can't stop it.
Pretty much, yeah.
A whole town would burn down. Whoops.
Yeah, definitely that kind of attitude.
So this could definitely be a power play to control his house or win favor. And, you know, my speculation definitely is, what's the long con for Fiona? You know, she wouldn't offer services out of the goodness of her heart. She has something something to be gained from this. Exactly. Yeah.
Definitely. You're right on the money, so.
I think the way you've set her up too is interesting, because in the beginning it was revealed that she had the idea for the farms, quote unquote, the setups that they currently have where humans are very easy to access. So it's like, well, you got what you wanted set up. So like, what are you up to now? What else are you trying to do?
Yeah, definitely the too much and never enough, you know, saying is something that she falls under for sure. So,
yeah, I think the only thing that keeps her genuinely interested is like playing people as pawns in a game and not actually like succeeding in the game, but like the game itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's very much like a name of the wind to play a good game.
Yeah, like once she gets what her prize, like, whatever, time for the next big thing.
Yeah.
That's definitely how I'm picturing her.
If you're not putting everyone else out of business, someone else is going to put you out of business. That's her thought process. So,
Very well put. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did appreciate this kind of cool down chapter where we get more political intrigue and plotting and really just trying to figure out everyone's motivations and machinations.
She's also interesting, too, because she's starting to plant seeds of doubt in House Verudicus. So Geldum is now, like, a little bit concerned that Davion won't succeed. You know, he was already sitting in his study at the beginning worrying that Davion hadn't been in touch. And then Fiona comes in and she's like, where's Davion? You could have had my hunter instead. So.
Yeah. And, it, you know, is it she doesn't like Davion? Is she threatened by him? Does she not like the fact that he's involved with her niece?
That didn't seem to bother her that much. They talked about it in this chapter.
Yeah. But, you know, she's very cards close to the chest, so it's hard to tell what she wants.
Yeah. I mean, she wants her hunter in there for sure, but
yeah,
that's as far as we can see with her plans. We were going to ask about the tea and the, like, the blood-infused tea and everything there, because that's where they were drinking it, but we...
Spill the tea!
We discussed.
Yeah.
I would love, like, a Vampire Food Network channel where everything just has, like, a little bit of blood in it.
That's what they'll do on Halloween.
Man, that would be a very tedious show, because they'd all, I feel like, act like the count. They'd be like, one, two, with their ingredient list.
I was imagining like a weird Guy Fieri
vampire. Like, 1 year I was Guy Fieri for Halloween.
Oh, phenomenal. Amazing.
That's they so actually cool. sell Guy Fieri wigs on Amazon with like a headband. Oh. And it has the spike hair.
I should have acquired one.
No, you can still get him. There's a lot. So the shirts are too expensive. But you can go to Value Village or Goodwill and find a Guy Fieri shirt. Because he's just a walking gift shop, right?
Yes, he is.
So, yeah, I had, like, the whole getup. And the reason I did it is our friend was hosting, like, a family Halloween party, and she hates Guy Fieri. So I was like, I'm going to be Guy Fieri for Halloween.
I love it.
What's not to love?
I know.
I know.
So at work, I have my own, like, personalized lead apron since I work an x-ray in the operating room. And the inside of my lead is all, like, intense bright blue flames. And I always call it... I'm like, oh, it's my Fieri flames.
Yeah, man. They need that Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives music, like, as you walk in to take the x-ray.
Welcome to Flavor Town. Patient's, like, wide open and out.
For these vampires, it'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Davion and Carnith have become allies. They are homies now.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not homies.
Maybe not homies. Definitely allies.
Yeah.
So, for now, their interests have aligned.
So I think you, at the very beginning, Sam, predicted that they would become allies. So your prediction was right.
Yep. And off camera, we got that big exposition taken care of where Davion revealed to Carnith about his past. And Carnith revealed how his dad was able to break his snare and leave the Intercontinent.
And then I thought this was so funny. So you've obviously set up Davion as wanting to leave Moncroy, or at least leave the situation he's been stuck in for 10 years. And he's hoping originally that, you know, they'll do the Wayward funeral. They'll give Regis his whole farewell, and then Carnith will help him break his snare and leave. But of course, Carnith does not agree to this.
Just when you thought he was out, you're dragging him back in. And it's a pretty interesting play. Instead of just fleeing and moving on, he's like, why don't you take me as pretend prisoner and we destabilize the entire vampiric court?
Go bigger, go home.
I know. And you know, Davion's like, no, no, absolutely not. And, you know, Karnath is, you know, egging him on a bit. And, you know, not quite fully calling him a coward again, but, you know, there are bigger fish to fry. We need to do something about this.
But I like this moment where Davion's like, you have freedom, like, right in front of you. Like, why are you thinking about not trying to go through with this plan? So I like his internal dilemma that he has here. And he ends up agreeing to Karnath's plan, and then he leaves off the whole section and that we've, you know, cut it off at for the episode with the cliffhanger that he knows exactly which vampire they can blame, because as part of this plan is Karnath is saying that, you know, take me in as prisoner, and to prevent House Verudicus from immediately killing me, I'm going to tell them that a different vampire in the court hired me to assassinate the son. The plots are becoming thicker. Everyone's getting more and more twined. There, you know, it's lots of like smoke and mirrors of like, oh, we'll pretend this is happening, but I think it's going to end up blowing up in their face a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Karnath did bring up a very good point where the Vampiric Court has not had to struggle in a long time. They've had access to wealth and blood for so much time that, you know, they're kind of complacent. So an intense upheaval like this, people are going to probably act rashly. They're not going to be as cold and calculated because some of their senses have dulled over time for being safe for so long. So there's potential to cause an uprise and destabilize things, but they're going to have to be very careful, because if you have characters like Fiona, she's going to see through a lot of the BS and she's formidable. So I'm interested to see how things will play out.
I thought Karnath meant that, like, at first they would be civil with each other, but then once they can't sort out what's going on, it would become really bloodthirsty because they have been so complacent. And so they thought all these people were their allies, and now they don't know who to trust at all.
Mm.
So I guess it could go either way.
We will have to wait and see. Or as Brian famously says, all will be revealed.
Yeah, all will be resolved in 250 pages. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't make predictions, because I know what happens, as I've said. Besides, Sam, you thinking their plot is not going to go well, do you have any other predictions? Like, what do you think Fiona's up to?
She's too mysterious. Like, there, for me, I feel like there's not even enough breadcrumbs for me to even make a proper prediction for her.
Okay.
Other than, like, she's obviously in for control. She wants to have everyone do her bidding. So even if she's not outwardly, like, top of the pyramid, she wants everyone to kind of, like, act on her behalf.
Okay.
I know at some point there's gonna be that, like, big reveal moment where Davion is revealed to be a wayward and not a vampire, and everyone's big gasp, Fangs out, you're dead, like, and him and Karnath are gonna have to, like, do an entire, like, melee against, like, 30 vampires. So that's, I don't know, like, it could be mayhem. I have no idea.
I love it.
Those are pretty good predictions.
Because I feel like that was Davion's biggest fear this whole time. Like, low profile. Don't get caught. Don't get caught. Meanwhile, Karnath is like a lighthouse. He's like, look at me, everybody. So, you know, you get these two.
He is a lighthouse.
These two polarizing characters. I would be shocked if Davion isn't revealed.
Okay.
So.
Interesting.
I'm not saying anything.
That's where I stand. Yeah, me either. That is where I'll plant my flag.
Those are good. Those are good.
Love it.
I'll make t-shirts. Karnath is a lighthouse. But this is a really fun section. I think we got some great speculation, fun fight sequences, tons of witty banter, fun vampire recipes. Had it all.
Vampire recipes are crucial. Yes. Yeah.
It's not a book without a vampire recipe.
Yeah. No, this was a lot of fun. And that was, like, the hardest part for me, was trying to figure out the political intrigue stuff. I hadn't really done anything like that before. So I was really nervous when I wrote this book, honestly. I was really nervous that it was all going to just be really bad. And that I completely bungled all that. And then when my wife is reading it and she's like, no, I'm really enjoying the intrigue. Like, I want to find out what happens. I'm like, okay, whew, all right, I'm good. Because she never reads any of this kind of stuff. So once she gave me the heads up that the intrigue was intriguing, then, you know, I felt pretty good. So.
It's definitely been a very strong component of the plot, and I'm also enjoying it immensely.
I like it because I think in... there wasn't really a chance for political intrigue as much in Treasure of Lorev, but I think in Malcosay, it was... there wasn't a lot of political intrigue in the royal family. It was more like Analia coming to terms with like who she wanted to be. So there was like internal conflict, but they were a cohesive family unit. Like the royal family didn't have anything devious going on within their dynamic. And I think this is fun for you to expand into characters that, you know, say one thing and mean something else, or do one thing and it's got multiple meanings, or, you know, even in terms of like Yaspin, he's got more politics going on than some of the other characters. And it's fun to see you create these characters where it's like they're doing one thing on the page, but like we know that something else is going on behind it. We just don't know what yet.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to write. I definitely enjoyed writing just a very different book from the other two. So
I feel like they're all cohesive though. But yeah, it does feel different. Just like a totally different kind of story, but I like it.
Yeah. I'm still just waiting for that great showdown between a Lore Revian cyberpunk vampire meets a Monkoy True Blood vampire.
I want Yaspin to get some of those cyber fangs.
Yeah.
I think that'd be awesome. Yeah. He's got the black market hookup. He could totally make it happen for himself.
Mm-hmm. He could. There is a... you never know. I like leaving those little things where it's like, in the future, there's just so many little things I could do. So
no, I think that's cool. Yeah. That you just like leave open avenues. I think that's the end of the section, because we got to the end of chapter 10. I didn't write it as a question this time, because I actually wanted us to be able to think about it for next time. But if we, I want us to all think about, like, if we were going to cast this as a movie, who would be cast as the character? So I'm not putting us on the spot this time, but I want to, like, think about it for next time, because that's one of, like, my favorite things to do when I'm reading a book. Okay. And as soon as I say I like also to do that, I immediately forget, like, every actor or actress I've ever seen in my life. But
or you only think of the really hokey ones. You're like Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. You know, Tom Hanks play everything because you can't think of anyone else.
Right. No, I think we could come up with
Danny DeVito is Yaspin. You want to hear a secret?
It's never Sunny in Montcroy.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Oh, I love it.
All right, so we'll definitely do some homework, come up with our cast list, and bring that for our next episode.
Yeah, because I think we're going to be right in like the thick of the book next time.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun.
Yeah, because it's 11 through...
15 or 16?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I actually had the book up on like this side, so I was scrolling through it as we're moving on, just so I had my copy there. And then it's fun to do this because there's all these little things, I you know, all these little details that it's fun to bring back when we do this show. So love getting to go through it.
I hope it is helpful.
Very much so. I gotta go back and listen to the Malcosay one, because that'll probably be the next intercontinent story I write, because that's been like the strongest in my head. So, yeah. So I got to go back and listen to some of that stuff so I have all the details in the lore and they're not using, like, the wrong minerals for stuff. Oh, yeah.
Have we visited all the intercontinents yet? Like, the physical?
We've visited, like, the main ones that matter. Like the most well-known ones. There's all kinds of little ones. And I kind of leave it open so I can always have others. But these are, like, sort of the big ones that matter. So that way everything else is kind of affected by the economies of these three.
Gotcha. So. Oh, yeah. Wasn't there like a mention of one that was like a volcano at one point or something?
The one that Jared's from, there's like a volcano.
That's right.
Well, actually, there's four big ones because where Scory is from, too. But we've only like barely kind of been there, not like as much.
So. I forgot. Yeah, he was from a separate one.
Yeah. But those four are like the ones that do the most. And then all the others are kind of around, and their economies and stuff aren't as like big and robust and whatnot. So,
okay, cool. Well, I mean, that leaves us plenty of places to explore and
revisit some familiar faces
for sure.
Love to see Oros Reloaded, see what he's doing.
Well, those are cool. Yeah. And I want to post the Yaspen art you sent us for this episode because we talked about him so much and I really like that picture.
Yeah, I was going for his look. I was trying to think of a look for him. I can't remember if I talked about it last time, but I was like, I wanted a look that looked like badass, but like a little bit of like, how to say it? It's like a dude who would punch somebody in the face, but also could enjoy the finer things. He knows like what whiskey he likes. You know,
debonair. He looks like like a gentleman cowboy in this picture.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, I was like, what if like Lemmy was mixed with like some class, you know? So that's why he has like the Lemmy from Motorhead mustache. Yep. I actually had that type of mustache beard thing for a little while, and just because it annoyed my wife and I thought it was hilarious. So like one day I was like going, I was like, I'm just gonna do this for fun. And I did it. She was like, oh my god, this is
this is me now.
Yeah, I am the Yaspen now. So I can cosplay as Yaspen whenever, you know, I just need a cowboy hat and a razor.
Don't forget his big belt buckle.
Yeah. Yeah, the belt buckle was cool. So
it's like, yeah, Christian did some cool stuff on that. But I feel like it fits him.
I actually think I might have. Sorry, now we're on the topic of cool art. And it's like, oh, what cool art. He actually gave me multiple poses to choose from.
Ooh.
Let me see if I have. And since you guys are such Yaspen people.
Do you get feedback from your other like beta readers or other fans, like who their favorite characters are? Like, does everybody love Yaspen?
You know, it depends. What's funny is I've had people who said they actually liked Peregrine the best. That was really common, was to have people really like Peregrine. Yeah, she was like very popular with a lot of readers. A lot of female readers really liked her. Yeah, I don't know. I think she was one of the most popular. Her and Fiona, like a lot of readers really liked those two.
I do really like Fiona. She's just got like the cool badass vibes that I feel like are cool and like a strong female character.
Yeah, she's just...
Hey, fantastic listeners. We got a little off track towards the end of the episode, but where we pick up is Brian explaining how he, working with different graphic artists, helped create his unique and beautiful cover art for his book.
And I also like to let the artists really like, you know, put their style and their stamp on it. So I want to leave enough ambiguity that they can kind of have some fun with it. Because like with the Carnetha illustration, originally it was just going to be him. And then he enjoyed the idea of him stabbing a vampire so much that he was like, you know, I'll throw in the vampire and him stabbing the vampire like no extra charge because I just loved getting to do that. Because normally he's charging like per like character and stuff. But he just did it because he had such a good time getting to do it. And then it was actually his idea because from this ones I showed you, it was like one was him standing, one was him kind of swishing a sword, and the other was him. He was like holding a vampire and stabbing it. And he was like, hey, you know, I'm trying to fit this in like a vertical, you know, page of a book, which is hard to fit those two people in. And he's like, do you care if I turn the vampire around and he's stabbing him in the back because then I can fit him better? And I was like, oh, 100%. Like, go for it. So yeah, there's some really cool like back and forth getting to like figure that stuff out. So he's the one who reposed the Carnetha illustration to make it actually fit in there so much better. And originally he's like, oh, I didn't think like, would you mind? I'm like, no, man, go for it. You're the artist. You have the visual eye for it, not me. So that's why I
yeah, I just can't.
So
I'll trust you to do your craft. I'll do mine. Yeah. I mean, Carnetha's image is so cool too. And obviously we're going to share all of these on social media, like as the episodes come out. I love all of them. And I like the sort of like inky style. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. Like, it just looks like it's all grayscale, but like the way that like the actual like brush strokes look is like inky. And then I think you specifically in this chapter section described the way that Davion moves when he's in his like incorporeal form is sort of like smoke and ink. Yeah. So I imagine that like curling and coiling. So I like how the imagery details like fit the atmosphere of the book itself.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Thank you. Yeah, it was fun. I'm excited. I think I definitely will be back. I have I have like some story ideas brewing. I can't say much now because we don't want to spoil it. But yeah, I definitely have. I have story ideas of the fallout of all the events, like, you know, so when all is resolved, I have ideas for things that could be unresolved. So
cool. Yeah.
I mean, it's good not to back yourself into a corner or like give yourself nothing left to write. So that's smart that you leave little open avenues and different characters that you add in as side characters who can become main characters later. And I just like the way that you've set up your world, like it's not sequential. And I know that that's like specifically what you designed to do, but it seems like it's working out now that we're in the third book really well to have little tidbits that cross-reference each other, but you know, you don't need to read them in any kind of order. Yeah.
I honestly tell people too, when they come to like my Comic-Con booth or whatever, I think this book is the best jumping on point personally. Like, I feel like it gives you sort of the best introduction. And then if you read this one first, I think it actually makes the other two like more rich reads. So
yeah, because I could see how the like references would go from this one to the other ones.
Yeah.
So smart. Like, it's just a really smart way to like build your whole series, you know, instead of making it sequential.
The Asherverse.
Yeah, the Asherverse. Yeah.
All right. I think this is a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I think so. We got a lot of talk about the art, so I'm excited to share it again on our social media. Do you want to remind everybody of your social media like handles and channels and everything where they can find
you? Sure, yeah. I did just have to update my website URL, so this is perfect time for that. So it's ashernovel.com. That's my website URL. I had some issues with the old one. I was still trying to iron out. If you find me on Instagram, it should be Asher_novels, I believe, and then Asher author on Twitter. Yeah, Asher_novels is Instagram, and then Twitter's Asher author.
Perfect. And I can link all those like in the episode notes too, so people can find you as well.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm most active on those two platforms, Instagram and Twitter. I have a YouTube channel too, but I've needed to post a video for a while, so bear with me on that one. I'm working on one about all the French comics I bought while I was on vacation, so.
Ooh.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That is fun. All right, well, you can leave that as a little teaser for everyone to go to your channels, and
yeah. Maybe
it'll make you make the video too.
Yeah. Yes, very much so.
Thanks, listeners. If you're looking for more, check us out at fantasticbookspod.com, where we have book reviews, reading list suggestions, merch, and you can even send us a message.
Or find us on Facebook and Instagram at Fantastic Books Pod.
And if you like what you've been hearing, don't forget to leave us a review.
Thanks.
Golden Rise Media.